Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is a finite work with a clear goal that you'd like to bring to life. The funding goal is the amount of money that a creator needs to complete their project. Funding is all or nothing. No one will be charged for a project unless it reaches its funding goal. This way, creators always have the budget they scoped out before moving forward.
I know where that one comes from this time. Yeah,
so this is going to be a bit of a salty cast, I have a feeling.
As opposed to usual?
Everything that I'm bringing this week is not very positive.
And you're looking for me to bring the positivity. Yeah. Ouch. All right.
This will be fun. So what have you been up to this week?
This past Sunday, I had a chance to play in both a Girl Underground one-shot and a session of Forbidden Lands. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make the other sessions at least this month.
So they're doing it weekly? They're going to do
They're doing it weekly for about 4 weeks, and then they're going to fortnightly because the person running it is from the UK.
Nice. The one thing, and Simon... Cool Mini or not, yeah. They just had a real short-term Kickstarter campaign. And basically, it was a stealth garage sale of all of their previous Kickstarters.
Okay.
So they promoted it as, we're raising money for soundtracks for three or four of our most popular board games.
Okay.
And sort of fund those. But if you pledge $1, you can get into the pledge manager. And then all that stuff that you missed from our previous Kickstarters that's in our warehouse, you have access to. First come, first serve.
Wait, okay. So they ran this as a Kickstarter campaign. Mm-hmm. And were there multiple tiers or only $1?
There were multiple tiers. And they did have packages where you could just buy previous Kickstarter pledges. Okay. And the funny thing about that is when they ran those original campaigns, they said Kickstarter exclusive, this is never going to be released retail. Right, so they're not lying, but they are.
By keeping it on Kickstarter, they're keeping it Kickstarter exclusive.
Right.
Okay.
But they're basically, you know, re-releasing it. So the limited time or limited opportunity, or this is your only chance to get this, is very much not true. And I'm not sure if that's showing kind of cracks in their business model. I mean, how much do they actually have in a warehouse that they need to get rid of that they could legitimately run another Kickstarter? Right. So that's a little concerning. And the company, I think they're very addicted to Kickstarter being kind of prepaid before they go into production. And you would think that they've got so much experience and probably so many good connections with production in China and everything that they do and the artists that they're working with, that they should be able to handle this. I mean, they have Eric M. Lang doing game design. They have some great illustrators that they picked up from other game companies that collapsed. So they have the credibility, they have the experience to do this in a standard business way where they create something that they think will be popular and they see how it goes instead of everyone prepaying.
Yeah, we've kind of discussed before how, yeah, I think some companies are addicted to Kickstarter, and from a business sense, I guess it makes sense. Mm-hmm. You don't have to take any risk, and waiting until the thing gets funded before you kind of do it ensures that you're going to have enough to do it. As a customer, yeah, it seems kind of, if not shady, kind of to run a Kickstarter campaign to clear out your warehouse. Right. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was just something that I was really turned off by because I was already there so often. I mean, like every other month
they've got
a campaign going. And just the way that they promoted this, it was a little confusing because they, you know, they're calling it the Time Vault. And so, you know, they're giving you access to the plethora of optional buys from old campaigns stored in our U.S. warehouse. And so that also means that everyone worldwide is paying shipping from the U.S. Instead of, you know, from Asia. So it's structured differently, letting you revisit Kickstarters of the past. But the first thing that they are kind of promoting is brand new soundtracks and digital art books. That's what they're funding for. But of course, it was moving old inventory.
And the way Kickstarter is set up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think you have to fund something.
Yes, right.
So
that's why I read the definition at the beginning is because that's why when people with big money are moving into it, that's a little, it's supposed to be to kickstart, kind of bootstrap up a small creator, their ideas, a small company, and actually bring them, you know, maybe to a viable state where they are a real company that can make profits from games. But it seems like there are companies that are just stuck on this cycle.
Now, again, we've discussed before how I look at Kickstarters, where I'm much more inclined to back something that I feel would not be able to have been made without a Kickstarter. And I'm much less likely to back something that I look at and go, you could probably make this on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially when it's licensed IPs and things. I mean, when I see those things on Kickstarter, I'm like, what is going on? And it crowds the field enough, or it creates these like shadows over smaller projects. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to see smaller projects because you're going to see listed, the ones that are making millions are going to be what you come across. Yeah. When you visit the site.
So. I wonder if, kind of cynical, but what with Kickstarter busting up the union for the workers, I wonder if, or I would be inclined to think that those big money projects behooves Kickstarter to promote them because they're getting a cut of the
thing. Yeah.
So I think Kickstarter is a company, and people have pointed this out. Kickstarter is a company. Their goal is to make money, mm-hmm. and they're going to do that by attracting big money projects that they're going to get a bigger cut from.
Yeah, and that's a shame. And it seems like a lot of things on the internet kind of move that way. They start out with this new idea to empower people and give people a voice and give people, and then just, oh yeah, but capitalism, you know, does what it does. And basically you start pandering to the same things and doing the same style of business that everybody else does. So no matter how lofty your ideals are, you're kind of drugged down into that mess. That brings me to, I guess, the next,
mm-hmm. yep,
the next salty point, the mess of capitalism. So I recently saw that there's a new RPG system.
Oh yeah.
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 And it's free to download. Mm-hmm. It's a 97-page PDF.
I was surprised at that, yeah.
And it's beautifully laid out, beautifully illustrated, full color, excellent. I mean, comparable with any, you know, Paizo, you know, Dungeons and Dragons product, anything that you've seen. And this is produced by Wendy's.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. I've downloaded the PDF. I have not opened it or read it.
Yeah, so it's, I just skimmed it a little bit, and it's basically like a simplified or a dumbed down D&D 5e, because they've got advantage and disadvantage and real simple things. But the buffs and debuffs involve what fast food item you've eaten, you know, before you...
You mean the player.
Yeah, or the player, before you enter combat. So they themed it on their menu.
Why would they not?
And so you have to say things like, I belong to the order of the junior bacon cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So you have skills and abilities that are thematically... Yeah,
appropriate to a Wendy's menu.
Right. Yeah, okay. So it's fresh, never frozen, basically, is the theme. And of course, then everything that you're facing are like evil kings with paper crowns.
Oh, really?
And
oh,
no. Clown princes, you know, with... Yeah. Yeah.
Some kind of chicken wrangler?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I'm sure there's some evil colonel with this chicken somewhere.
Army of chickens. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think KFC is far enough down the chain that they don't see them as a threat.
All right,
they're focusing mainly on the ground beef. I feel so sorry for the people that worked on that. It's such a waste of time.
Like I said, I've only looked at the cover. Mm-hmm. I saw people tweeting about this, and it seems like there are no listed credits for who wrote it.
Mm.
There's credits for artists, I think. I'll have to double check that. But from what I've been seeing, there's no name attached to like who created the system.
Those artists had to paint treasure chests with little chicken nuggets in them. And it's confident art. The thing that's so sad about it is it's just as good as any mainstream RPG out there.
Artists got to eat.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just... And they probably didn't credit the designers of it because it's just been a string of suicides.
Oh, maybe.
Everybody that's like wanted to legitimately work in the RPG industry and said, what? Wendy's is going to pay me to... Mm. Yeah. So to add to this... So mm-hmm. that was... Okay, that's fine. I can ignore that. That's... silly enough. But I believe tonight you can watch a live stream, and Critical Role will be running a one-shot sponsored by Wendy's.
Yep.
So they're doing, and this is not like, I may be mistaken, but as far as I saw, this is not a charity event. This mm-hmm. is not anything. This is just a big paycheck that's going to Critical Role for saying French fries, hamburger, milkshake, ha ha ha.
I realized that radio is not picking up the faces that I'm making during this conversation. Right. So imagine me making all kinds of grimaces during this conversation, because that's what I'm doing.
It's just brutal, and just doesn't Critical Role think maybe we should? We just took a bunch of people's money. We just took mm-hmm. millions of dollars from people on Kickstarter. And now we're going to take maybe a million, probably less, but you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars from a fast food company to do this. I mean, don't you worry about any credibility or any your brand or anything? I mean, I don't know. It's amazing. I mean, it's just odd. And the thing that I mean, this doesn't happen anymore. Like I was saying, the mess of capitalism, things tend to just create nonsense and mess and noise.
Yeah.
But Wendy's could have just thrown money at, so they're like a third tier fast food.
Okay,
you know, that's why they do things like this to get attention, just like Burger King was making Xbox games.
In the 90s. In the 90s. Okay.
Yeah, so just trying to get attention from people because they don't have that much to lose. They don't have any market share to lose. But why not just look for a third place, medium sized company that could use some funding and just sponsor their game, and even do the same Critical Role sponsorship, just sponsoring a legitimate game and just say, sponsored by Wendy's, eat our food because, you know, we love games and you love games and love Wendy's. You know, that kind of step back away and just, you know, 50s style television sponsorship so people get a nice feeling about your brand and see that you're doing something positive instead of this mocking kind of, ha ha ha, you're going to use your chocolate frosty powers to...
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that.
It's just, yeah.
I agree. It's weird. It's kind of depressing. Possibly even more so, like on the way over here to record this. I'm going to have to go verify stuff. Mm-hmm. But from what I read, the person who owns Wendy's contributes more to like right-wing conservative funding stuff than Chick-fil-A.
Nice.
So, like I said, not entirely sure about that. I'm going to have to go look at it. I don't have a reason to doubt the source it came from, mm-hmm. but that just kind of added another layer of, really? Because like, as you said, now if they are sponsoring Critical Role to play this game, then Critical Role is maybe indirectly, you could argue that, going to contribute to conservative reelection campaign, if that's where the money is going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's all this ethical stuff that's coming up now. And while this could have just been kind of like a ha-ha marketing campaign,
right.
It kind of isn't, right. At least for me, because of that. So, yeah, I don't know what to make of this other than, like, when I first saw the Wendy's RPG, I'm like, oh, it's going to be based on D&D. Mm-hmm. Because, hey, spoilers, D&D has already kind of gone commercial.
Right.
It's been commercial for a while.
Really?
So I was expecting it to be like, hey, here's the Wendy's version of D&D.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of surprised they made their own, though. I mean, it's kind of based off D&D.
Yeah, it looks very much. Yeah.
Yeah. Why they did this and why they did it to the level that they did, I have no idea, apart from the fact that, hey, we're talking about it, so there you go.
I think that's what a lot of this half-assed viral marketing, and once, you know, big brands started hiring social media managers and you had people running Twitter for Chick-fil-A and everything, it's just like,
Wendy's is a pretty popular Twitter account at how sassy and kind of sarcastic it is. So
right. Yeah. So I think that's part of the thinking. But like you're saying, though, I mean, they could have just done something legitimate, or they could have just like themed stuff, showed some in some marketing campaign, shown some allegiance to tabletop and say, hey, nerds, you can't tabletop.
Don't call them nerds if you want their patronage. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But you can't you can't play this game without your, you know, whatever, your Baconator or whatever.
Yeah. You mean kind of the way Mountain Dew.
Yes.
Is right. for gamers.
Right. It becomes that, you know, just like push that association and just be real friendly to it instead of doing this odd thing. This is really odd and it's so much effort and so much
money.
It
is. Yeah. That's what I'm surprised at. Yeah.
And the result is going to be nothing. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, who knows?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I guess though, you know, you could just have kind of people new to the hobby and things that don't have any affection for it or don't have any nostalgia for it that see this and just like, whatever. And
yeah. Maybe that's what it is. The whole kind of South Park, nothing matters. Don't care about anything. Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
I can't imagine anybody not playing this ironically.
And I was thinking about this on the way over because of other stuff I've been doing. Kind of doing something ironically still means you're doing it.
That's true. You're putting it out there. Saying Wendy's in the middle of your That's pretty brutal. I mean, it could have just been a bunch of nonsense, but it is really they're trying to really get themselves out there in that group. I mean, people that are watching Critical Role are, you know, going to be notified of this sponsored live stream. So it's going to get a lot of eyeballs, and I don't know what effect they're hoping for.
More money?
It does smack of that third place kind of desperation that always, you know, you have, you know, the people that aren't going to lose market share. They'll just, you know, Hail Mary something.
Who knows? Maybe this will work.
Yeah, right. It's creepy because they spent so much on it that it seems like they suspect, well, what if this catches on?
Maybe.
How is that even possible?
Would it have the same effect if it was some half-assed, sloppy-looking PDF?
I think so. I mean, I think what they're going to gain from this, it doesn't matter. I mean, like what we were just talking about. We were talking about the fiction for Warhammer 40K.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be as good as it is. It's good, and they've got talented writers. It doesn't have to be that good. I don't think this needs to be anything. This just needs to be a nod to tabletop, because it's almost like a Mad Magazine version of Dungeons and Dragons. So it doesn't have to be as nice, and they don't have to put so much money behind it. So you got to wonder, like, why? What do they think they're going to return? Because they're not going to ingratiate themselves with the actual tabletop community. They're going to be like, wow, that was kind of a
interesting point.
Cheesy insult. Yeah.
I really don't know. Maybe they're actually looking to make a foray into the world of tabletop RPGs. Who knows?
It's amazing. So I'm looking for the sci-fi setting coming soon.
I'm looking for the other. I'm looking for the Chick-fil-A or a Popeye's Chicken sponsored RPG. Yeah. Right. And I can only imagine what the Chick-fil-A one would be.
That's interesting. You bring up kind of the political, like, you know, Kickstarter and their union busting, and then the political allegiance of Wendy's. It's so messy now, and people like want a simple world where they can just, you know, back a brand that they love, and just like, it doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mess. It's a
I mean, there's no real ethical consumption under capitalism.
Yeah, yeah.
However, I, like, you still have to make allowances for, and I'm going to say this poorly, income or whatever. I mean, like, back to the Kickstarter thing. Mm-hmm. Like, as far as I know, there's not been a call for a boycott, mm-hmm. even though there were kind of rumblings about it. Mm-hmm. But, and a bunch of independent kind of designers said, you know what? A boycott on Kickstarter is not going to hurt Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. It's going to hurt us.
Yes.
And so, yeah, well, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. Sometimes you have to make the choice of, I know that some of my dollars are going to this whatever thing that I would rather they didn't, but most of my dollars are going to these creators that I want to support. And sometimes you, I kind of said that poorly, but sometimes you have to make that choice, mm-hmm. especially regarding to Kickstarter, not with regards to the Wendy's thing, because there are great independent or games right. that you could support
yes.
that aren't connected to a giant fast food chain. So
it's just messy. Let's put all that behind us. So that was all the negativity.
Oh, no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Because,
yes,
backing on that Kickstarter thing, mm-hmm. guess what else is on Kickstarter?
Oh, no, what?
Tamer, King of Dinosaurs, Book 6.
Book 6 is
Book 6.
Oh, nice.
Funded in 3 hours.
Whoa.
Is close to 60,000. And, yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah,
wow. Yeah. So,
yeah, my massive Twitter thread about going through Book 1, mm-hmm. which is what made me think about the doing things ironically is still doing them. Because, like, yes. I am blasting this all, irregardless of how bad this is, I'm plastering it all over my Twitter.
Right.
And
right.
You know what? To recoup something, I actually said, you know what? If you enjoyed this, because I sure didn't, here's a link to my coffee page. At least keep me caffeinated so I can keep doing this. So, yeah.
That's yeah. amazing. Yeah. Yeah. So, 6 books in the series.
Yeah. Writing yeah. 6 books, mm-hmm. teasers of a 7th. And you know what? As much as I don't like the series, you mm-hmm. have to admit, the author is just cranking these out and has obviously found a market and mm-hmm. knows exactly what their target demographic wants. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, that's impressive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In this day and age to find an audience that's going to support you that much, that quickly and that long term is that's definitely admirable. And I think people are forgetting that, you know, there are certain tones and certain contexts and certain genres that aren't going to be mainstream, but people still really want. They really want access to those kinds of stories, or just, you know, just like I was talking about my weird happiness with the Horace Heresy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just like, it's a thing that, you know, I probably shouldn't waste my time on, but it's that thing. It just hit that sweet spot. So
as much as I like reading the old Conan things, I kind of look at these in slightly the same way. Like, I think we're not going to go back to the physical pulp books. Mm-hmm. But I think the explosion of self-published and kind of like, I guess, more independently published stuff in ebook and Amazon, whatever, Kindle, is kind of the modern equivalent of the pulp yeah. paperback era.
Right.
Where it's just kind of like, okay, the quality is maybe not going to be great, but we're just cranking it out and, mm-hmm. and people are buying it and you're looking to make money on volume rather than making an expensive book.
Right. Yeah. And I was surprised the quality of the audiobook. You actually had like a male and female.
Oh, so you listened to it too.
I did. I was in on, I had to check it out. I had to see what was going yeah. on.
But, you know, my thought about why there's a male and female.
Why?
You can't have a dude reading all that because then it's super gay.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
I bet you that is the thought process.
Right. Of course.
Yeah. And I have no idea how the voice actors read that with a straight face.
There was probably a lot of cut.
I'm sure there were a lot of cuts. And yeah, kind of, you know what? Gets back to the thing that, you know what? Artists need to eat. They got to get a paycheck. Mm-hmm. So nothing bad to say about the people who recorded that because they got to make a paycheck too.
Right. Yeah. The other non-gaming thing that I was doing this week is I'm getting ready for the Okinawa Comic Con.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I've got my book 3, the third part of the Citizen Spaceman comic release there. And so I'm doing a bilingual comic.
Right.
So yeah.
Are you doing that like the other two?
Yeah. It's going to be the same format where left to right, it's English, and then right to left, it's Japanese, and it ends in the middle.
Right.
So some people open the book and go, I don't know what I'm looking at. Yeah, yeah. But you kind of flip the covers and they see. So this is the third year that they've done this Comic Con, and it's at the Camp Foster. So it's on the military base.
Oh, really? Okay.
But open to the public. So it's going to be Japanese and American visitors. But it looks very American Comic Con, just like the Tokyo Comic Con is kind of imitating the American version of a Comic Con, not a comic market or a comic cat like Japanese do with manga. I don't know. I'm curious to see. I've had a lot of people say good things about it, and the crowds are really good. And it's about 14,000 visitors.
Is this the first time you're going?
Yes, the first time I'm going.
No, okay, yeah, I thought so, yeah.
Yeah, they don't run the Tokyo Comic Con particularly well. It's big. There's not a lot to do. There's a lot to see. There's not a lot to buy.
Interesting,
and,
okay.
But the interesting thing is the stage, instead of having small, independent, like little ballrooms like you would at a convention center, the stage is just in the middle of the hall. The celebrity guests and things come out and they do Q&As and stuff right in the middle of the show.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Everybody
cool.
can hear what's going on. It's not
nice,
like,
yeah.
you know, sequestered
yes, yeah.
away. You don't have to wait in line and fight for seats. So that's an interesting thing. Because they've got a lot of, like, you know, Marvel movie actors and things that they fly over here. And they flew Stan Lee over twice.
Not going to happen this time. Yeah.
It's 90s. Well, they could fly over his remains.
Oosh, I wasn't going there. Okay.
But I was surprised. I mean, I would not get on an airplane at 90 years old. And
well, it might be a private jet or something like that.
Well, yeah, that's true. The Tokyo Comic Con is not being run particularly well because they don't quite know what an artist alley is and what retail booth space should be like. And so the prices are just out of control. And I guess, you know, Tokyo is an expensive city, but it's not more expensive than New York or L.A., as far as, you know, exhibition space and things. So
do you think it's just kind of smaller and so they kind of don't plan it as well, and, you know, the knowledge about how much stuff should cost?
Yeah, and I don't think it's curated very well. So they get people kind of mixing, they get like vendors in the artist alley and they get kind of things mixing up because they're not paying attention.
Well, look at the zoning of Japan.
Yeah, right. So they have the same zoning problems.
Exactly.
I'll report back after next week.
Oh, I'm curious. Yeah,
sounds cool. So after I visit there and see how things go. You want to talk a little bit about the Girl Underground?
Like I said, last night I got to play a session of Girl Underground, which is a game written by Lauren McManaman and Jesse Ross. Mm-hmm. And Jesse Ross wrote Trophy.
Oh, cool.
So kind of similar game. It's kind of Alice in Wonderland, Pan's Labyrinth, kind of, you know, the hidden magical world. There's a central heroine called the Girl, and everyone at the table plays her kind of magical companions. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because at certain times, certain players take on they portray the Girl. Mm-hmm. So it's the Girl isn't run by the GM, it's run by the other players. But when you're kind of done playing the Girl or you want to play your companion, you pass the playbook to another player. Mm-hmm. So it's a shared role, mm-hmm. which I think is a really good way to do it. Mm-hmm. I wish the place we played had been better because Japan's holding the Rugby World Cup, and about halfway through the game, a TV playing the rugby game went on, and then could barely hear anything after that. And it's kind of, our game ended up being very Pan's Labyrinth, kind of dark. Mm-hmm. The Girl, the heroine, was a Japanese American in the concentration camp during World War II. And that's kind of why she had escaped to this magical world. Mm-hmm. She was looking for her father, who it turns out got shot and died trying to cross the barbed wire to get out, to get his family. Ooh. So that's what I mean. Like, things went pretty Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Like, of the four companions at the end, like, two died in the epilogue. One decided to stay in the magical world, and the other one went back with the Girl. I played essentially like a mermaid. Mm-hmm. We had like an ogre that reminded me of like Ludo from Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. We had a paper person made of origami, which was kind of like Kubo and the Two Strings. And we had a dragon.
Nice.
A dragon ended up dying. The ogre stayed in the forest. The mermaid went back, but then washed up as a body in like the San Francisco Bay. That was mine. And the paper person actually went back with them and can hide the Girl. Mm-hmm. And we decided that's how she survived the concentration camp. Because the paper person would just kind of like fold around her whenever bad stuff is going to happen. So it's an interesting game. I would like to play again. There's a lot of interesting stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. I should say it's kind of powered by the apocalypse. So you're looking at like those three range bands of kind of full success, success with complication, and a miss. And again, in the book, it specifically says a miss doesn't mean you failed to do the thing you're doing. It just means there's bad luck or something happened or, you know, there's things are now worse than they were before, but not because you didn't do it. Like to try that again. And I really like the kind of central role shared by everybody. I think it's a good way to get around the problem for games where there should be kind of like one central protagonist, but that would be real boring to play because you don't want to give that to one person because they would kind of dominate. So it's a shared role. Everybody kind of gets a turn at it and you kind of pass it around. I think that's a nice solution to games where the story or the setup would have that kind of problem.
I like that much better than just it being run as an NPC, like the GM running. Yeah, because then you get some flexibility in mood and tolerance, and you'll have unexpected interactions because some players will play that character differently. Yeah.
Well, I should say one of the kind of the central themes of the game is the Girl breaking these manners. that have been given to her, kind of Alice in Wonderland style. Like at the beginning of the game, you have to choose on like 8 manners, and it's things like girls should never wear boys' clothes, girls should always be silent, or like girls should never be dirty, or things like that. And there's like a whole list of like 30 of them that you got to pick. And there's mechanics for when you act against those, you kind of cross them off and change it to like a belief that then kind of gets better. So the whole kind of journey is the girl breaking these manners to kind of like, I guess, essentially discover more about themselves and when then they come back into the real world and are kind of like a changed person.
Interesting. Wow. Well, yeah, that theme is, I didn't expect them to go so far with that theme and make that so interesting.
There's a lot that play with gender too. Like we didn't pick most of those, but there's like, you could do all of them based on gender. And I think I've been a player. I've printed out the booklet. I've bought the booklet, but I've not read it yet. I'm pretty sure at the beginning, there's a section that says, okay, we're calling the girl a girl. It doesn't necessarily have to be, or if they come back like from the world, they don't have to be a girl anymore.
Yeah, that sounds good. So yeah, we'll put a link to Girl Underground. Yeah. I think people should check out that PDF.
Sorry, I missed the Kickstarter, and I would definitely like to play this again.
Nice. Well, you could run it.
Oh, I could run it. Yeah.
I think that'd be good for the Monster Hearts group. I think would do very well with that setting.
Yeah, do a live stream on that.
And you also had a chance to play a Forbidden Lands session.
I did. I didn't get to play that much. We did, again, it was kind of like a three, four-hour session. 5 players. Most of it was character creation. And then I think we started playing through possibly a printed module in the game. Yeah, it's very similar to the Alien RPG. Didn't really get a chance to explore how ability damage works.
Oh, okay.
But I see now that there are differences in the mechanics where it's a die pool of your ability, your skill, and your weapon, and they're all separate dice. And ability dice can, if you roll crappy, you take damage to an ability. Those skill dice, that can't happen.
Right.
And your gear dice, your gear can degrade based on what you roll on those dice. So I do like that. It was, we had a real wide mix of experiences when it came to role-playing games. So, and that wasn't a negative. It just, and it didn't even really slow things down all that much. It was just interesting to see the different people with different experience levels kind of come at the game differently. There was a little bit of confusion at the beginning of how you build a dice pool. I mean, like it's, everyone got it at the end, but yeah, kind of seeing where the dice came from. Like if you're an experienced kind of role-playing game, you would get it after a roll, like, oh, okay, I see exactly what's happening here.
Right.
But it did take a little explaining. We also didn't really get to see ability damage do anything because there weren't a whole lot of rolls. And I think at most each person did like 2.
Okay.
So they were coming from different abilities and we could see it tick down, but then I don't think most of us rolled that stat again. So we didn't get to see our abilities degrade. We also didn't get into combat. There was like one sneak attack with a bow that dropped an NPC. So you kind of get the sense that combat is fairly lethal, but we didn't get to see that on any PCs.
Oh, right. So. Okay. Yeah, I was curious your reaction because it is different from the Alien where you remain competent. Actually, the more stressed you are, the more competent you get, but the more chance of, you know, being knocked out of the action.
Yeah.
So we had a question in the YouTube comments about the song that's used for Idle Red Hands. And that is by a band called Tripod Jimmy. It's off of their CD Big Shot Pedro. And the name of the track is Roadkill. So the studio version is what we use for the weekly intro and outro. And the live version is what you hear on the regular episodes of the podcast and also on the beginning, the intro for the YouTube videos. So that's Tripod Jimmy and the track is Roadkill. Yeah, so keep those comments and questions coming and we'll be sure to respond to them either on the cast or in the comments section. So where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter where I'm doing my massive tamer, King of Dinosaurs rant on that. that's at HiveMind, HyveMynd.
How's the Patreon?
I've put the Patreon on pause.
Oh, okay.
Because, and I put a post up, in addition to finding it very difficult to find the time to make these, I'm not sure if the monthly subscription fee is what I want to do.
Oh, okay.
So I've kind of paused it. I'm taking a step back. Maybe I'll come back in like January with like a per post one and try and do like 1 or 2 a post and collapse the pledge levels because it's like running a Patreon is almost a full-time job and I don't have the time to do it.
Right. Yeah. It's just like another social media account. Yeah. That's
very true. Yeah.
I do a weekly single panel gag cartoon that I live stream on Monday. It would be Sunday night, North American time, Monday, Japan time. And you can find that at abusecartoons.com on Twitch and YouTube, Abuse Cartoons, and follow the cartoon on Twitter at Abuse Cartoons. And I'm also doing the Inktober this year. So an ink drawing every day of the month in October, but this is going to be the Citizen Spaceman. These are going to be scenes and drawings and kind of inspiration that I'm using to develop the third part of Citizen Spaceman. So they're on that stream, but I'm just kind of combining projects. And if you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, please visit idleredhands.com. On YouTube, Idle Red Hands, and Twitter, follow it, Idle Red Hands. If you want to be involved in the podcast, please consider becoming a patron, patreon.com/idleredhands, and take a look at the tiers to get involved, give us feedback, and actually tell us what to do, what you'd like to see in the future for the podcast. All right, so that's it for this week. We will be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Wasted sprawl. I had one more chance to make it out of